Welcome to CHOATE's post-Roe v. Wade podcast series, hosted by a multidisciplinary team of attorneys discussing the Supreme Court overturn of Roe v. Wade and its impact on employers, professionals, healthcare providers, data and privacy service providers, educational institutions, and investors.
Hello, and welcome or welcome back to all of our listeners today. I'm Christine Savage, and I'm the co-chair of the healthcare group here at CHOATE. With me today is Adam Bookbinder, the co-chair of CHOATE's Government Enforcement and Investigations Group, and Mark McPherson, a senior associate in that group. As you're no doubt aware, the Supreme Court issued its final decision in the Dobbs v. Jackson case last week, overturning both Roe v. Wade and Casey, and finding that there is no federal constitutional right to abortion. With the decision now issued, abortion bans or severely restrictive abortion laws in more than a dozen states already are or will be in effect within the 30 days after the decision was rendered, having been triggered by the ruling. Taking into account proposed legislation already filed in other states, it's expected that in the near term, more than half of the states will have significantly altered abortion laws in effect. Some of these laws include civil or criminal penalties for those who either perform abortion services in violation of state law or who aid and abet an individual who obtains an abortion. Other state laws include civil bounty provisions, allowing members of the public to bring civil actions against those performing these services or assisting women in obtaining those services. Today, we're going to focus on a number of legal and practical or operational data privacy and cybersecurity issues facing businesses that collect, store, sell, or purchase data that may relate to women's reproductive health and healthcare services. Businesses with access to this data should be prepared to answer questions from their boards, investors, employees, and customers about how they will or won't use this data, given the dramatic shift in state laws. For example, we envision businesses being asked whether location data could be used to show a woman traveling to an abortion clinic, or whether company records could be used as a basis for civil suits or criminal prosecutions of healthcare providers or women seeking care. Or what if hackers obtain data collected by a period tracking app or another health IT provider to identify women who may have had an abortion? Could the company be liable for any downstream consequences? We've asked our colleague Mark McPherson to lead us in a discussion of these potential issues and some implications to which businesses and individuals may want to give additional thought.
Adam, one issue I've heard raised as a concern by privacy advocates is the packaging and sale of location tracking data by any number of companies. Do companies need to consider whether their geofencing or location tracking data could be used to create an evidentiary basis for civil or criminal enforcement of state anti-abortion laws? Maybe you can start by explaining a little bit about what geofencing is.
Sure, Mark. And that is a good place to start. So geofencing is essentially setting up a virtual boundary or line around a particular location that triggers a response or records data when a mobile device enters that location. And yes, I do think that geofencing or location tracking data could be used as evidence in civil suits or criminal prosecutions of women seeking abortion services or people providing those services. There's actually an example of the use of this kind of data in abortion context from right here in Massachusetts going a few years back. And that was in 2017. When the Massachusetts Attorney General's office announced settlement with a company called Copley Advertising, which was a Massachusetts company, in a case that involved geofencing in this context. What Copley had done there was created these virtual fences around reproductive healthcare facilities like Planned Parenthood in cities across the U.S. And then once women or their devices crossed these virtual fences, Copley would send targeted advertisements to their phones that linked to websites with information about alternatives to abortion. In that 2017 settlement, Copley agreed not to use geofencing technology at or near Massachusetts healthcare facilities. And the Attorney General, Maura Healey, issued a statement in conjunction with that settlement in which she said that while geofencing can have positive benefits for consumers, it's also a technology that has the potential to digitally harass people and interfere with health privacy. So that's the backdrop here in Massachusetts. With that in mind, on June 24th, the day the Dobbs decision was announced, three U.S. senators asked the Federal Trade Commission to investigate Google and Apple's tracking of their users, and particularly how this location data could be used to track women seeking reproductive health services.
So the senator's request suggests that the 2017 Massachusetts settlement didn't result in a nationwide end to this sort of practice. Is that right?
That's right, Mark. The packaging or repackaging and sale of geofencing and location data has continued in this area. For example, a May 22 Vice magazine article reported that it was able to purchase cell phone tracking data from a company called SafeGraph that mapped the movements of people visiting Planned Parenthood, how long they stayed, and then where they went afterwards. And according to that article, SafeGraph had obtained the location data from third-party apps installed on people's phones and then repackaged that location data for sale. SafeGraph classified Planned Parenthood as a specific brand that could be tracked, enabling Vice to purchase a week's worth of location data from more than 600 Planned Parenthood locations in the U.S. for $160. While the data was theoretically anonymized, it shows where the phone went, both before and after visiting a clinic, which could potentially reveal a person's home or work location.
So how could this data be used now that a number of states' post-Roe laws create civil or criminal liability for performing or aiding and abetting abortion services?
Well, there are a couple different ways. First, government officials or citizens who could initiate civil suits against individuals to enforce certain state laws, like the one in Texas, could buy or subpoena the data. And in states that criminalize abortion, law enforcement could subpoena it for use in criminal prosecution.
Now, there's been a lot of social media talk over the last week advising women to stop using applications that track their menstrual cycles and fertility. So for companies that collect or store that kind of information, what do they need to be mindful of?
Well, similar to the concerns with the use of location data, there are concerns that consumer data that's submitted to a health IT company or app could be used as evidence of when a person last had their period, or in order to establish that an abortion may have been performed outside the time period allowed under that particular state's law. State privacy laws require entities that collect personal information to be truthful about how that data could be used and disclosed. But state privacy laws generally don't prohibit the sale of consumer data, even sensitive data. And there are companies that do sell this data. The 2020 Consumer Reports investigation examined that five of the popular period tracking apps, including BabyCenter, Clue, Flow, MyCalendar, and Ovia, they found that they all shared user data with third parties for marketing and other purposes. As a general matter, a health IT company or an app's terms of service will govern to what extent the software developer can use, disclose, or sell the data it receives. But in light of the Dobbs decision, businesses should expect that users of these types of applications will be paying closer attention to those terms of service. And particularly for businesses that charge consumers to use their applications, they might expect some number of consumers, or potentially a lot of them, to discontinue their use. And that will lead to a corresponding decline in revenues if customers don't like those terms. Even where terms of service are clear, companies don't always comply with the terms of service, and sometimes they break privacy-related promises. For example, Flow Health, headquartered in London, they entered into a settlement with the Federal Trade Commission last year over allegations that the company, after promises of privacy, shared health data of their users using its fertility tracking app with outside data analytics companies, including Facebook and Google.
But isn't this information covered by HIPAA?
No. Consumer-facing health and wellness companies like the period tracking apps are typically not required to comply with HIPAA. HIPAA only applies to certain organizations: healthcare providers, insurance companies, and certain types of claims processing companies. It's unfortunately a common misperception that health information is always protected by HIPAA, but it's not. So in general, period tracking apps are not going to be covered by HIPAA because the individual is affirmatively providing data to a non-healthcare provider, technology company, or the app developer. And it's going to be those terms of service that typically allow the company to resell that data.
Then is there any pending legislation out there to bolster privacy rights to this sort of sensitive data?
There has been legislative movement aimed in this direction at protecting this data since the Dobbs draft was leaked. It's likely to pick up steam now that the decision is out. A congresswoman from California introduced what is called the My Body, My Data Act. That's federal legislation or proposed legislation. that would limit the circumstances under which companies could collect this kind of reproductive health information and would give users the right to demand that the companies disclose exactly how they're using the data and that companies delete the data upon request. And now, again, after the decision itself has come out, you've got U.S. senators calling for congressional investigations into how companies like Google and Facebook are tracking users and sharing that data.
So what about cybersecurity issues related to reproductive health data?
Yeah, there are cybersecurity issues just like there are with any kind of sensitive personal data, because this data can be stolen by hackers who these days can get access to pretty much all kinds of data. As an example, in 2020, the California Attorney General's office settled with a company called Glow, which operates a fertility tracking app. And according to the Attorney General's complaint, the Glow app had basic security failures that put its users' data at risk. Given those flaws, hackers could easily have stolen Glow's data. But even well-protected data is vulnerable to sophisticated hackers these days.
In light of those sorts of risks, companies that have this kind of data, what do they need to be thinking about?
Well, it's always a good idea for companies to consider whether they actually need all of the personal data they are collecting. Bottom line is, if they don't need it, they shouldn't take the risk of collecting it. Companies also need to keep in mind that even if they have a good privacy policy and intend to follow that policy, their data can be stolen by hackers, as we've discussed. Or if the company goes bankrupt or is sold, that data will be acquired by others. So again, worth considering whether the company really needs this kind of very personal data. And along these lines, some period tracking app companies have already announced in the last couple of days that they are working to anonymize all user data that they collect, or at least offer anonymizing options to their users in an effort to address these concerns.
Well, thank you for your insights, Adam and Christine. And for those of you listening, thank you for joining us. We hope you found this podcast valuable.
For more information, please visit www.choate.com. You can also listen to additional podcast episodes in the newsroom of our website and subscribe to them wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. The information presented in this recording is for educational purposes.